Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm your co-host, Jeannie Rice. We also have Dr. Tim Hayes. Today is Tuesday, July the 22nd, 2014. We welcome you to the show. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because then that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. We have another awesome, beautiful day in the Ozark. Beautiful weather, sunny, on the medium temperature range. The evenings are nice and cool. It's just been beautiful here. And we are appreciative of everyone who chooses to join us, every day that you choose to join us, and move this work forward to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. When I speak of this work, what I'm speaking of is the work of first century Aramaic forgiveness. Our definition of forgiveness is quite the opposite of what our culture teaches. It's nothing whatsoever to do with I let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me, but rather is the tool with which, if I'm experiencing some sort of pain or turmoil, I remove literally the cause of my pain. And when I do that, everything starts to change. So we're here to support people in experiencing those changes and moving to a new place in the way they function in the world. So when you recognize this forgiveness process is key, it behooves you to understand why it becomes necessary to forgive. And when we say necessary to forgive, people will say, well, I already forgave my mother, I already forgave my brother, I already forgave my enemy. And we're going to counsel you that the last thing you want to do is forgive anybody. Never, ever do that again. It's a major mistake to do that. Well, Michael, you're saying you're talking to us about doing forgiveness, but you're saying it's a major mistake to forgive people. Right. That's exactly what I'm saying. And that seems confusing at first because you've been taught, as I was taught, that forgiveness is about how I pain the turmoil going on inside of me. And of course, it's all your fault, but I'll let you off the hook. I'll forgive you for what's going on inside of me. If I let you off the hook for what's going on inside of me, have I done anything at all to address or change what's happening inside of me? My offering is no, I've done absolutely nothing. And what we're inviting you to do, as opposed to let others off the hook for what's happening inside of you, is recognize that every time you've been in pain, you're the one who's been there, and that pain is an internally generated process. When you choose to forgive, that is to remove the root of that pain, then your pain disappears and everything changes. Everything's different all of a sudden. So that's what we're here to support. That's what we're here to engage in. And we appreciate the fact that you're here joining us and doing that. And, Gina, do we have Dr. Kim with us today?
He is with us and he's on.
Awesome. Well, let's say hello to the young man. How do you be, sir?
Well, I'm doing beautifully. I'm driving, so you'll have to let me know if road noise is a problem. But I'm
coming through loud and clear.
Wonderful. So how's the intensive going?
things are rock and roll. We got through the Y workshop yesterday, and we're just getting ready to start on the next level, the next section. So we're rock and roll.
And the next section is what?
Well, I'm actually sitting with the asking guidance for what that's going to be. Normally, at this stage, we would do intuitive development. Or pardon me, we would do healing through relationships in this codependence intensive. But seeing as how we're also doing the communication, did you hear what I think I said? I'm considering that we might do that next. I'm just not sure at this moment. Waiting for guidance.
All right. Well, they're both wonderful tools, so I'm sure everyone there will benefit whichever way it falls out. And I mentioned last week that I was doing a breath session with somebody on Thursday for the first time in quite a while, actually in my practice. And
right.
I just thought I would report that that went very well and really helped loosen up quite a bit of stuff, so that, you know, this is kind of a plug for the intensives and or when you come to town on the Saturday, if you're offering it, for anybody who hasn't done that still point breathing work yet, to strongly consider giving it your attention, because it's a fabulous tool. And even after one session, this person came back and said 5 days later, he's used it every day, and it's really facilitated with release of energy and sleep and insights. So it's a wonderful tool, and I know you're going to do that in the intensive, but just a plug for people who might be on the fence thinking about making it to Heartland for an intensive or making it out to Woodstock when you're here next, to go the extra effort and engage in the still point breathing workshop. It's a phenomenal tool. Are we still there?
Michael, are you there?
Suffering from mute challenge. So I was saying to my mute button that for anyone that is thinking maybe you'll join us in Woodstock, it'll be the second week in September. I don't have the dates in front of me, but you can go to whyagain.org and the flyers there with the whole week. We'll be doing Sunday service at the Unity Center on Sunday, and Sunday afternoon, Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night are all free workshops. You'd certainly be most welcome to come and join us. And then Saturday is the one workshop. Go ahead.
The one workshop you charge for.
But there is a fee for, so all day Saturday workshop will be $125 for Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing. And is there a night that we're not doing it, you just jiggled those brain cells, that maybe there's a night with something else going on?
I was just going to say that it's the Sunday the 21st through Saturday the 27th.
Oh, okay. Good. I was thinking it was the week before, so I just haven't looked at the schedule lately, but anybody who wants to look at that, and I was just talking to a woman up in Wisconsin who's going to come down for the week. In fact, she made the request. This woman's in her 60s, and she just came across and read the book. Actually, a fellow named Bill Vitale, who does the Ho'oponopono work around the country. And Joe did a review of our book on Amazon, said it's the best book he's ever read, and he had recommended her reading this, and she's been reading it, so she's going to come down and join us for that week. And she's a woman who's in her, I think, early 60s or thereabouts. And I was going to put out the request that asking if there might be somebody there in Woodstock who'd be willing to put her up for the week while she comes for the workshop. She's interested in coming and playing. So maybe you could put that out to the support group and see if there's a GA. But it sounds like a really sweet lady. If there's someone who'd have a space and be willing to do that, then perhaps she can do it with a little less expense than getting a hotel room.
I will make a mental note and mention that to the group tonight.
Awesome. And other than that, as Dr. Tim's speaking about, our intensives are moving forward. We're in the middle of a 16-day laws of, or 16-day codependence to interdependence communication practicum. And the energy's cracking loose. We've got several purification healing processes going for people, and things are really moving, and just really sweet energy. Sweet group of people, really nice space being created. And we'll finish this one in about another 12 or 13 days, and we'll start with the 9-day why is this happening to me again. And that 9-day why is this happening to me again, we'll go into a 9-day teacher training for people who want to deepen their experience of the forgiveness process or actually want to teach the work. Got a dual purpose. And then the next segment will be Laws of Living, a 16-day Laws of Living course. And that's the one we've been talking about just about every week with Rex and Michelle as they're going into the prisons. And we actually just finished doing the personal code evaluation post scores for that group in the prison. And, you know, those scores, Dr. Tim, on the evaluation, they can't change while we're seeing across the board. The biggest change across the board with these 15 people who continue the course is changes of anywhere from all around 30 to 70 point shift in hostility. Just major, major changes, and major changes in love of self, love of others, freedom from fear, to 50, 60 point changes. So pretty awesome and pretty amazing, and we'll be doing that intensive the latter part of August into early September. So I think it's August 22nd to September 6th, maybe, if my memory serves me well. If somebody's ready to go to the next level, get in touch with us. Come to Friday. We've got small groups going on, so there's pretty intense focus for each person, and we'll be able to support the process.
Sounds exciting.
Yes. Anything else exciting in your world this year?
Just moving my office and still seeing patients and spinning all 7 plates. So.
Lots happening.
Lots happening. All of it good. All of it good. Looking forward to the support group tonight. And it's been interesting because we've had a steady trickle of new people finding out about the group. As I mentioned a few weeks ago, somebody went on Amazon and ordered your book and read it cover to cover and then came to the support group. And even though your book is reportedly out of print, through Amazon, some people have been able to find it, either used copies or some non-Amazon location selling a new one. But so I would encourage people to, if you want the book in your hand rather than just reading it off of Michael's website, check out Amazon. You might be able to find a copy. I know some people who have recently.
Yeah, there are a number of people who are selling books. You know, there was a period of several years where we offered a bonus with intensives. If people registered early where they got free books, and so there are a lot of books out there that are circulating that they're just not in our hands, so we don't have them available. But it is available there on Amazon, and the odd time on eBay. Be careful on Amazon, because there are one or two people who are selling it for $50 or $60, or at least offering it for $50 or $60, which to me is crazy. Of course, they're saying it's signed, and anybody who wants to pay $50 for a copy of the book signed, I'll sign one for you. But anyway, it's kind of funny. Kind of funny, but yeah, there. Actually, you can order it on Amazon in some cases for $3, $4, $5. Which I have to do worksheets on, but that's okay.
Well, there the other thing that's on my mind is that probably 5 or 6 times just in the last 2 days, I have found myself saying out loud that I am so grateful for these tools. And I can't imagine going through the major life events I've gone through in the past 15 years without having access to the tools you provide and several others that I had learned prior to finding your work. And so, you know, when I hit a stretch like this where there's so much going on, And it pops into my mind several times a day how grateful I am for the tools. I just thought I should mention that on the show. It's truly a blessing to be able to go through this level of intensity of change and emotions of people around me and be able to hold that conscious, active, loving space. And I know I didn't do that for the vast majority of my life until about, 15 years ago or 20 years ago when I started getting in touch with these powerful tools. And then, of course, for the last 10 years or so that I've actually had the worksheet process, it's just gotten exponentially better. And my ability to remain conscious and take increasingly more full responsibility for whatever I'm feeling, it's a tremendous blessing. And I just want to extend my gratitude.
Well, I certainly hear that loud and clear, and I have the same gratitude for having found the first century Aramaic Yeshua, and especially his forgiveness process, because I couldn't fathom what my life would be like today without it. And I look at, right now there's a young man who's 10 years of age in our codependent 16-day intensive. And there's been a young lady here who's about 18, another one who's in the same 18 or 19. And just beginning this understanding at this age, and this one young lady, her mother was here and did a year at Heartland back about, 15 years ago. She was 3 or 4. And now her daughter's following her footsteps. She's actually here on a 2-year program, a work support program. And the progress describes that this young woman is making, the things that she's not going to have to deal with. I mean, when I think about, to be 10 or 15 and getting this understanding, how monumental would that be? And so I certainly understand here and join you in your appreciation, and also my appreciation to you for your willingness to be handing it to other people and supporting other people and expanding it out around the globe, because that's what it's going to take, I think, to shift the whole game that's happening on this planet from one of war and disease, suffering, destruction. You look at the amount of wealth that's been lost in the last 100 years due to war and the number of lives lost, when we could have taken that wealth and used it to uplift and empower people and bring, more of everything, including the active presence of love into the world. It's like, whew, so monumental. So thank you for your part in that, and thank you to everybody who, even just lending a listening ear to doing your work, opens the space and expands the energy out. So that's what we'd be here to do. So, Jeannie, shall we check and see? Is there anything happening in the phone queue, or anything happening with the chat room?
No, it's really quiet. Michelle and I are the only two that's in the chat room. And Alyssa, Michelle's daughter, 16. Amber's 17. I'm at 18. And then Jude is, 11 or 12? So it's amazing.
He's 10, but he might be 11.
Yeah, so we've got 3 youngsters here. So that's a good thing. We do have a hand that just went up. It's area code 765. You're on the air.
Hi there, Michael, Jeannie. This is Sunny.
Hey there, young lady. How can we support you today?
Actually, I just wanted to take a moment and say thank you and let you know that this work is so phenomenal, and truly, without the network of friends and the family, there's been so many miracles and blessings through a very, very trying time. I opened Pandora's box, Michael, and maybe to assist beyond what Rex has helped me with, I'm still really not probably fully canceling the goal, in that just I don't know what the mechanics are for me in really and getting that. And that is maybe circumstantial or what have you. I don't know what the keyword might be, but really canceling the goal.
Well, here's my take. Here's my take. Our culture does not teach us to cancel goals. And so having the brain cells to cancel goals is a bit of a challenge for most people. And so there's an experience that we do in the workshops to help people to comprehend just what that means. And so maybe everybody in our audience would like to do a goal-canceling exercise and, you know, help build the brain cells maybe on another level for doing that. So what I'm going to ask everybody to do is to imagine that in front of your face you have about a 3-inch, maybe a foot and a half or 2 feet in front of your face, you have a 3-inch red rubber ball in front of your face. And then what I'm going to ask you to do is to reach for and take a hold of that ball. Now, if you've chosen to do that, you'll notice that you just did a behavior. And we're going to call behavior the movement of muscles. So you did a behavior in response to a goal that you set. And the goal was to reach for the ball. Now, what I'm going to ask you to do is let go of the ball, put your hand back down. And once again, imagine that you've got that red rubber ball in front of your face. And with that ball in front of your face, I'm going to invite you to, this time, instead of reach for it and take a hold of it, reach out as though you're going to take a hold of it. So set the goal to go ahead and take a hold of it. And when your hand gets about halfway there, cancel the goal. Now, if you've done what I just asked you to do, you change your behavior. And that's what canceling goals does, is it changes behavior. And so that's how you cancel a goal.
May I, Michael?
And it's a practice. You know, like every other skill, it's not something we've particularly been taught to do, and so it can seem like a challenge. And the practice will, like any other skill, will strengthen you in your ability to cancel goals, which is the core of forgiveness. And for those who haven't yet accessed the forgiveness process, we'd invite you to go to our website, www.whyagain.org, and you'll see a bullseye in the middle of the page. If you click that bullseye will take you to a series of links. And the links are all about how to remove from your mind literally your very capacity for any form of hostility or fear. That is, it will teach you how to forgive. And so we invite you to go ahead and participate in that. And does that make sense of, or kind of give you a better sense of what it means to cancel a goal?
Actually, I felt that, Michael. I truly felt it in the breath. It was an automatic breath when I realized that it just,
Well, there's a good point. Let's expand on that point. When you took that automatic breath, what happens is, and the world hasn't taught us, is that the way that we create stress is to set a goal. So when you stressed yourself by reaching for the ball, that was literally a stress, and the mind's purpose is to respond to stress with behavior, to guide you into a certain behavior. And when you cancel the goal, you relieved your stress. And oftentimes it will be accompanied with, literally, a breath. Cool. Nice.
I don't know, my vocabulary may not match yours in this, Michael, but it's kind of like getting it out of your head and functioning through the heart, because your head is just going to screw you. Trust me.
Well, I'd refine that language just a little bit in and make it, I can screw myself with my head.
Well, yeah. And,
we're doing it to ourselves.
Yes, it's a beautiful journey, and something I can't wait to serve with this experience at, you know, sometime soon. But I thank you. I literally felt that, and then the word that came at that halfway point was just the breath just came, that sigh, and it was, the word was satisfied. So I thank you, and being able to apply that to so many things that somehow have got in my head while I was trying to renew my head through stuff is sorting it out, and I appreciate all of you so very, very much. And looking at your calendar, Michael, it's not verbiage. It is truly obligation. I'm my goal is still to, even if it's not until that late August, September date, I'm looking forward to really spending time with you. Tears of gratitude.
Put it in the hopper.
Everyone, thank you so much.
All right. Glad to be on the team. Glad to be supporting you.
Thank you. God bless you all.
All right. Bless you. Okay, take care. Bye-bye. 646-200-4169 is our call-in number. And if you are on the phone line, all you have to do is push 1. And through the magic of electronics, a little hand will go up on Jeannie's computer, and she'll know that you want to speak. And we would love to hear your voice. We'd love to chat with you. We'd love to share with you this ancient, awesome technology of forgiveness. So, Jeannie, what do we have happening?
Nothing yet. Not really quiet.
So nobody with a hand up.
Are you still there, Michael?
I'm here.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
No, there's no questions. Yes. There's no questions, no hands up.
All right. Cool. Well, if there are no questions and no hands up, let's look at another a piece of the puzzle. You know, in the ancient Aramaic, which I offer to people, is not a religious language. It's not a theological language. It's a psychological language. It's a physics language. It's a physiological language. It's a genetic language. When they said things like, the sins of the fathers will be passed to 3 and 4 generations, they were not talking about some terrible, awful thing. That word sin is an archery term. And all it means when you fire at the bullseye and you miss the bullseye is you're off the mark. This is what the scorekeeper would yell, sin, you're off the mark. Like, take another shot. And go back, and they had that understanding that these things would be passed from generation to generation to generation. We had some conversation about this yesterday. I'm looking at an article online from a group that is now in the science world saying, ooh, we need to look at the impact of health on generational patterns. And so let me read a little bit of this article, and it just affirms, I mean, we've been teaching this for decades, and it seems to be a new scientific discovery. Memories may be passed down through generations in DNA in a process that may be the underlying cause of phobias. So in this particular case, they're talking phobias. Down to later generations through genetic switches that allow offspring to inherit the experience of their ancestors, according to new research that may explain how phobias can develop. Scientists have long assumed that memories are learned experiences built up during a lifetime and must be passed on by teaching later generations or through personal experience. However, new research, now they were teaching this 2,000 years ago. This is not new research, folks, but it is to the scientific world, or so-called scientific world. And when you recognize, when I say so-called scientific, what I'm wanting to put out there is that, well, there's a double PhD from Princeton who wrote a book called The Nature of Scientific Revolution. And what he says is old scientific ideas die when the old scientists die. So there's not as much science in the scientific world as many people would like to pretend. And that's just the truth. And when we look at the truth, we get to see something different. So here's what they're saying. New research has shown it is possible for some information to be inherited biologically through chemical changes that occur in the DNA. Now, you remember we've talked about the Aramaic opening words in the book of John where it says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh. Word becomes flesh. How does that happen? Frequency. Power of life and death is in your words.
the power to kill your generations or bring your generations to life is in your words, because they make chemicals in your structure, or so-called chemicals. They reside in your structure as frequencies. We look at what we can see through our senses, and we call these chemicals. They're really not chemicals. They're mind energy. That's what they informed of us of 2,000 years ago. So researchers at Emory University School of Medicine in Atlanta found that mice can pass on learned information about traumatic and stressful experiences. In this case, a fear of the smell of a cherry blossom to subsequent generations. The results may help to explain why people suffer from seemingly irrational phobias. It may be based on inherited experiences of their ancestors. And this is one we might want to share with Ryan, Jeannie. So a fear of spiders may in fact be an inherited defense mechanism laid down in a family's genes by an ancestor's frightening encounter with a spider.
Oh, I am absolutely sure on that. When I was, before Ryan was ever even thought of, and I lived in an apartment, this huge spider, and I didn't have any bug spray or anything like that, so I grabbed a can of Pledge, and I pledged it, and it curled up, seriously.
Okay.
And it all curled up and everything, and I went to get a jar to put it in because I thought, somebody's got to see how huge this thing is. And when I came back, the sucker was gone. And I looked everywhere and could not find it. And I know this sounds ridiculous, but it is so true. The next morning when I woke up and went to sit up, I had a spider web completely across my face on my pillow.
He did not like being pledged.
And it was like, I mean, when I sat up, it crackled, the spider web breaking and stuff. I mean, I've got a terrible fear of spiders. It's the same with dogs. You know, people have a dog and, oh, it's a nice dog. It doesn't bite. And it bites me. So it's like those two things. But I've gotten over the dog thing because Ryan does have two nice dogs. But, yeah, the spider thing is definitely his and mine.
Hmm. Well, you might want to apologize to that spider for Pledge and maybe do a worksheet around it and let go of it.
He lived, though.
Yeah, but, boy, it was tough. Anyway, cute story. And so when you recognize that you're looking at things and there's some sort of fear or hostility, we're including both in the process, then that fear and hostility gets passed from generation to generation. And the person who says, you know, I think I'm going to dig this up out of my genes. We're speaking literally now. I'm going to remove this from my structure, can remove it from the family system and change the whole game for everybody in the family system. What an awesome gift to give your children, your grandchildren, and their children to come. What an awesome gift to give them the removal of what never belonged. And it doesn't matter, well, maybe I shouldn't say it doesn't matter. There is a difference. But when you remove something from your structure, energetically, you open the energy window for anybody in your bloodline that has the same issue to also move that out, as well as you open the energy window for anybody on the planet with that issue to heal that issue. So pretty powerful gift to give the world to say, I'm going to do my work. I'm going to face every hostility, fear, grief, rage, pain, drama, and trauma, and literally allow myself. One of the workshops we do is called Empowered to Heal. And we point out that because we live in an energetic world, the person who walks through the world carrying drama and trauma and pain and fear and rage and guilt becomes a walking disease factor, literally resonates that in everybody that they touch. And when one chooses to face and heal that dynamic, then what happens is, having healed that,
they walk through the world as a different influence and a different resonating energy field. And everything starts to change around them. When you heal a particular issue, don't be surprised if somebody shows up and just kind of spontaneously out of the blue starts to talk to you about that particular issue. Because as you open the space for something to be healed in you, you will open the space for that same energy to heal in the people around you. And so that's what we're here to support. That's what we're here to be part of. And we're delighted to be on the team. We're delighted to have each of you on the team. And if you have a question or a thought for us, push one. That'll raise your hand in our control panel. And we'll be having a conversation. Oh, let's go for it.
It is area code. Look, they just disappeared. I was just getting ready to turn them on. If you're still on, please press 1, and it'll put you right back in queue. I think it was area code 541, but I'm not sure. If you're still on there and you still want to talk, please press 1. And they're back on, and it was 541. You're on the air.
Hi, it's Julie.
Hey there, young lady. Welcome. We lost you there for a second.
Yeah, I know. It was my own indecisiveness. I thought I was on, and then I was off, and I just kept pressing it. I was listening to you this morning about the power of word, and recently I said to God during a prayer or a meditation, But actually what I was thinking I was doing was speaking to the one mind of the world, the place where we all meet in the collective one mind, not necessarily the God mind, but the one mind of our behaviors, I guess. And I was telling that mind to stop what it was doing. And I told it, I was thinking about these wars and all these sorts of things that are really the effects of what this mind is thinking. And that just had a huge effect on me that I could even muster up the words. And then here's what happened. It came back on me because I was speaking it from a fearful place, I guess, or I was somewhat responsible. I was affirming some sort of a power in myself to say it, that is what I wanted. So I guess it was a goal. Yeah, it was a goal. So it came back on me, and so for about a week now, I've been looking at, I've been following my own advice to stop what I'm doing, and I've been seeing how hard that is to stop all the comforts and what I eat, and, you know, a whole variety of things. And so here I am demanding it of a world that's gone awry, and I have this hard time in myself. So it's just another example of where I still have doubt and resistance to doing the work. And where I am, Michael, right now with it, I go all day processing and using the tools, but I don't sit down and do the worksheet. And I have talked myself into the idea that it won't matter. I know the worksheet is valuable, but I already know what the valuable part is. And so when I get there, I'm going to not believe it. It just seems like folly, okay? Now, that is a conceptual analysis of my non-being, of the worksheet process. I know that because I've taken myself out of the present moment, and I've made a concept out of how the worksheet works instead of just doing it. And there's this other voice in me saying, just do it. And
well, which voice do you
I need to get stronger about that.
There's a story that the Native American tells about the young boy who comes to the chief, to the medicine man, and says, you know, I don't know what to do. I've found that there's a black dog inside of me and there's a white dog inside of me. And they fight, and one is negative and hurtful, and the other one is loving and caring. And he says, I don't know what to do. I don't know which dog will win. And the chief says, the white dog will win. And he says, well, how do you know that? He said, because that's the one you'll feed. The one you're going to feed is the one that's going to win. And you'll notice we've had this conversation many, many, many times about, yep, okay, I'm committed, I'm going to do it. And then your resistance comes up. So my invitation to you would be to get some worksheets on your resistance, let go of it, and as your own intuition is instructing you, just do it.
Okay. Well, thank you. There's one more part of it, and I don't remember at this point which came first, if it was a physical symptom of, like, hives, which I seem to get towards the end of the day, and so that is a resistance also showing up. And I guess, I don't know, you know what, I'm trying to figure it out, and which worksheets do and which came first, the chicken or the egg, then it's just another barrier to just doing it. So I'm just going to do worksheets.
Okay. So here's the thing, you know, the workshop we're doing right now, the intensive we're doing is codependence to interdependence. And one of the things that I'll go through here in a couple of days is what I call the pseudo-solutions of the non-being mind. The number one pseudo-solution of the non-being mind is, if I could just figure this out, then I'd have it handled. And here's my input. You can't figure it out. If you have 100 people in the room, and every one of those people, let's say, can remember back to the age of 10, and they're all 50 years of age. There are 4,000 hours in that room of people trying to figure it out. And you can't figure it out. 40,000 hours, pardon me. You can't figure it out. But what you can do is you can forgive it. That would be my input.
Okay,
spend their whole lives being distracted with trying to figure it out. You've got a tool, you know. It's like, let me see. I'm going to sit here and I'm going to watch. I have a garden space out in the back, and I got some potato seeds right here beside me. I'm going to see if I can figure out how those potatoes grow. You know, how does a potato get that starch out of the ground? How does it get that moisture in it out of the air? I'm going to figure that out, and then when I get it all figured out, then I'm going to plant some potato seeds and eat some potatoes. You know what's going to happen to that person? They're going to starve for them.
Wow.
Can't figure out how to grow potatoes. But I love how Gandhi says it. He says, if you want to eat potatoes, you've got to use the hoe. If you want to get out of your genetic family patterns and your resistance, then you got to use the tools to do it. And if you don't want to, then you don't use the tools. That's okay, too. You know, it's perfectly fine. You know, a lot of people will just hang in their stuff and hang in it and hang in it until they become tired and sick of being sick and tired. And then they'll make a change. But, you know, and what happens is that people tend to dive down into deeper and deeper and deeper levels and layers of pain. And pain is a wonderful thing. It has an awesome, grand purpose. It makes your ears grow. So you finally hear, I think I want to eat some potatoes. Maybe instead of trying to figure out how these potatoes grow, I'll just take these seeds, put them out there in the soil, and water them. Something else will take care of the process for it if you do your part. The reality management worksheet is your part. If you do it, then the same power that grows potatoes will heal you. If you don't do your part, because you choose to do differently, you've got free will, you've got choice. Hey, the Creator's not going to go in and take away the pain you've chosen to have, the trauma, the turmoil, the conflict, the poverty, the insanity, the relationship challenges. The Creator's not going to take those away. They're your creation. You have every right to them. But just like, you know, preparing the soil, planting the seed, and watering the garden is your part, there's a power that makes the potato grow. You and I don't have a clue how that happens. Well, what we've discovered out of the first century Aramaic language is that there's a part for you to do in order to have every form of pain and turmoil removed from your structure. It's called reality management, forgiveness. So
if you want potatoes, you're going to plant the seeds and water the garden. You're going to weed it. It's just what you have to do. If you want that power to do the same thing with your hurt and your pain and your turmoil as you want it to do with the potatoes, then you're going to have to do your part or things will remain where they are. It's just the way the game works.
Well, thank you.
I have another question.
This little phrase that I've been, this little mantra of stop with what you're doing, I've been living with that for a week, and it's become a regimen, and I think it is attached to figuring it out. And so, actually, there's been benefit, but I don't know. What am I trying to say? Sometimes the insight becomes actually the barrier if we stay with that too long instead of moving forward with the next worksheet or the next what is presenting itself. Is that true? I've made that too much of a mantra.
More, that's kind of more of the more of figuring it out and more of distraction. And
mm-hmm.
to let go of the distraction means you move forward.
It's that simple, and there's nothing I have to do about anything. I just keep myself with another task on my list. Oh, I have to.
Yeah.
I have a list now of things to stop doing.
mm-hmm.
Okay, Michael, thank you. I really appreciate it. Thanks.
All right, blessings. Appreciate you.
All right.
And you at one point, a couple of years ago, you were planning on getting back here for, I think it was Laws of Living, wasn't it? Or was it teacher's training? No, you did teacher training, so you were planning on getting back for Laws of Living. Maybe it's time for a boost. Maybe it's time to take it to the next level. We plan to be here for that August 22nd intensive. So I'll just throw that thought out there.
I know.
We'll
thank you. Okay.
All right. Blessings.
Mm-hmm. I want to. All right. Okay. Bye. Thanks.
Jeannie. 200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue. We'd love to hear from you.
And or, of course, there's a chat room, and if you're in the chat room and you're not able to chat, the reason is because you've not yet registered. And if you register, it's a real simple process, then you can actually interact and type into the chat room rather than just watch what's happening there. So we're delighted that you're with us, and if you've got a question for us, you'll be the next one in line. We've got about 12 minutes or so left, and so we've got time for a question or two, if anybody has a phone for us. Put your hand up. Come join us. What do you think of this idea of things being passed from generation to generation to generation? Could that really be true? Yes, it is absolutely true. So let's move forward in that understanding. And what is it that I need to face in me? I'm going to go back to that article I was sharing with you. Dr. Brian Diaz from the Department of Psychiatry at Emory says, we've begun to explore an underappreciated influence on adult behavior, the ancestral experience before conception. From a transitional perspective, our results allow us to appreciate how the experiences of a parent before even conceiving an offspring markedly influence, you can hear this, both the structure and the function in the nervous system of subsequent generations. Mind energy becomes flesh. Physiology is altered. Now, when you look at that, you go, well, how is that possible? Now, that just doesn't make any sense. We got this physical thing. How can a thought change this physical thing? Well, let's go back to the root of our science, a piece of science that the so-called scientific world still hasn't caught up with. Let's listen to Einstein. On such things as matter, we have been all wrong. What we have heretofore called matter is energy, energy whose vibrations have been so low as to be perceptible to the senses. There is no matter. You see, you don't have a body. There is no such thing as chemistry.
Those things are appearances made up as pictures in our brain. But what's really there are energetic patterns. And when I put a frequency in that inserts itself into a cell, the literal shape and structure of the cell change. The physiology of the cell changes because it's not a physical thing. To our eye, it looks like a physical thing. You might remember Yeshua 2,000 years ago saying, do not judge by appearances. There is no physical cell. There is an energetic pattern that our eye interprets as a cell, but that's not what's there. And so anything that is added to the cell will change its structure. Anything that's subtracted from the cell will change its structure. If you have a cell that's in a diseased state and you enter into sin, remember that word from Aramaic means off the mark. If you put an energy that's off the mark into that cell, then that cell's literal so-called chemistry and structure are going to change and it's going to move toward a disease process. If you have diseases going on in your structure, notice that there are energy patterns in you that create feelings of pain and turmoil. And when you address with forgiveness that pain and turmoil, you remove those layers of information from the cell and the structure of the cell changes. Let's listen to a physicist named Max Planck as he's receiving the Nobel Prize in Physics. Here's what he says. As a man who spent his entire life studying matter, I can tell you this much. There is no matter as such. Our entire world is made of succeedingly smaller patterns of vibratory fields nested one within another within another. When you nest something in your field, let's say it's a hate, you put a frequency into whatever cell receives that hate. That cell is changed. That frequency inserts itself into the DNA. And future generations receive that new information in DNA. And it changes their structure and their function and their feelings and their perception. Our perception is designed to be guided by the active presence of love. It's designed not to be plugged into cellular memory and all the pain and trauma of the generations. Our cells are designed to be plugged into the active presence of love. How do we know that? Well, it's an assumption, I agree. But if you go to every person on the planet who's ever held a newborn child, and you ask them to tap into the essence of that newborn, you will find that their descriptor for the child is love, or some variation on the theme of love, the essence of the child. I think it's a fairly safe assumption to say, well, then maybe that's the energy we're designed to function out of. And maybe when we put something other than that into our cells, we deform the structure of our cells. Let's go back and listen to this guy from Emory. Here's what he says. Just 1 second, let me catch it. From a translational perspective, our results allow us to appreciate how the experiences of a parent, before even conceiving offspring, markedly influence both the structure and function of the nervous system of subsequent generations. Everything we do is either uplifting or dragging down, not only our own genetics, but our whole structure. We've been given this awesome gift, and, you know, we live in a culture that says, oh, pollute your cellular structure. What does it matter? Go out and do anything, you know, engage in any habit, do any drug, do any junk. You know, you want to smoke crack cocaine, go for it. You know, what's the big deal? You know, well, what the heck? You know, eat junk food. Go live off of those fried pieces of dead flesh that cost about 6 cents to put in a burger in the fast food joint. That'll take care of you just fine. Do you realize what you're doing to your precious genetics? You were given a gift. You know, it goes much further than the old joke about the family jewels. You were given the jewel of the family, a genetic structure that flows from the beginning of your family system through eternity. What are you doing to it? Are you uplifting it? Are you dragging it down? If you've got hostility or fear that you're pointing at someone else, and this is the way it usually works, then pointing that hostility and fear at someone else lets you think you're doing something about and to someone else. But your structure is the one who gets those frequencies. Your genetics are carrying that load. Time for us to start to uplift our genetics. So after this physician says it influences both the structure and the function of the nervous system of subsequent generations, he goes on to say, such a phenomenon may contribute to the etiology and potential intergenerational transmission of risk for neuropsychiatric disorders such as phobias, anxiety, and post-traumatic stress disorder. In the new study, which is published in the Journal of Nature Neuroscience, the researchers trained mice to fear the smell of cherry blossom using electric shocks before allowing them to breed. The offspring produced showed fearful responses to the odor of cherry blossom compared to a neutral odor, despite never having encountered them before. The following generation, so now the second generation away from the mice who were shocked, showed the same behavior. The effect continued even if the mice had been fathered through artificial insemination. The researchers found that the brains of the mice and their offspring showed structural changes in the areas used to detect odors. Dr. Tim, you were talking about this. Do you have any thoughts or comments at this point on those ideas?
Actually, Dr. Tim dropped off just about a minute ago.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, he's probably at his destination and off to work. So we're down to about 4 minutes.
I was going to say 3 minutes.
Okay, 2 minutes. Cool. So one question. We've got time for one quick comment, one quick question. Otherwise, let's finish this article off and just see what else these researchers have got to say. So again, researchers found the brains of the trained mice and their offspring showed structural changes in the areas used to detect odor. The DNA of the animals also carried chemical changes known as epigenetic methylation on the gene responsible for detecting the odor. This suggests that experiences are somehow transferred from the brain into the genome, allowing them to be passed in later generations. Of course, anybody that's been studying the first century Aramaic understands that we live in an energy system, and everything that's stored in something impacts everything involved in that something. It's just, you know, pretty plain, simple, and so they're saying that researchers now hope to carry out further work to understand how the information comes to be stored on the DNA in the first place. If we could just get these scientists to understand there's no matter, they're not dealing with cells, they're not dealing with physical structure, they're dealing with energetic patterns, all of a sudden, a whole new realm would open up. And in particular, the realm that we want to share with the world most dramatically is the process of first century Aramaic forgiveness. Literally, forgiveness is the way that you uncap the blocks that keep you from touching into what's in your genetics, what's in your structure, and forgiving those dynamics. So that's what we're here to support, and that's what the work is all about. And we're delighted that you're here joining us today. And we're winding down again. If you want to join us for intensives, you can look at our intensive schedule on whyagain.org. If you want to engage in the forgiveness process, if this is something that intrigues you, then we invite you to go to our website, whyagain, whyagain.org, and actually begin to put the pen to the paper. One of the reasons why resistance comes up to doing that is because, oh, my God, if I open this box, what am I going to have to look at? Everything. It's not fun to heal, but instead of carrying the filled box around and suffering from it, empty the darn thing. No, it's not fun to look into it. You know, the Greek says, don't open Pandora's box. You don't know what you're going to find in there. But what they didn't tell us, if you don't open Pandora's box, your whole life becomes like Pandora's box. Engage in forgiveness. Open Pandora's box. Remove from your genes what never belonged. Be free. We're here to support you. Play the strength of the show tomorrow and create the best year yet of your eternal life. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.
Continuously, 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 continuously.